Welcome to Voluntary Values on LRN, the Liberty Radio Network. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And this week we will start the show talking about some rare gold coins confiscated by the U.S. government. Emberly, I believe you have that story.
I do. Okay, so this was posted on Yahoo News earlier this month on the 5th of September. So a judge ruled that 10 rare gold coins worth $80 million belonged to the U.S. government, not a family that had sued the U.S. Treasury, saying it had illegally seized them. The 1933 St. Gaudens double eagle coin was originally valued at $20, but sold for as much as $7.5 million at a Sotheby's auction in 2002, according to Courthouse News. After President Theodore Roosevelt had the U.S. abandon the gold standard, most of the 445,500 double eagles that the Philadelphia Mint had struck were melted into gold bars. However, a Philadelphia Mint cashier had managed to give or sell some of them to a local coin dealer, Israel Swit. In 2003, Swit's family, Joan Langbord, and her two grandsons drilled open a safety deposit box that had belonged to him and found the 10 coins. When the Langbords gave the coins to the Philadelphia Mint for authentication, the government seized them without compensating the family. The Langbords sued, saying the coins belonged to them. In 2011, a jury decided that the coins belonged to the government, but the family appealed. Last week, Judge LaGrome Davis of the Eastern District Court of Pennsylvania affirmed the decision, saying the coins in question were not lawfully removed from the United States Mint. Barry Burke, an attorney for the Langbords, told ABCNews.com, "This is a case that raises many novel legal questions, including the limits on the government's power to confiscate property. The Langbord family will be filing an appeal and looks forward to addressing these important issues before the Third Circuit." The family said in its suit that in another seizure of the 1933 Double Eagle, the government split the proceeds with the owner after the coins sold for $7.59 million in 2002, according to coinbooks.org.
Okay, so I have a question here.
Yeah.
If the family would have started a museum and then put them on display as antiquities,
right,
could the government then confiscate them?
Well, I don't know what technically qualifies as an antiquity, because, you know, when I think of an antiquity, I think of something that's, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not just thousands of years old.
Right.
Or hundreds and hundreds of years old. I don't think something that's not even 100 years old would technically qualify as an antiquity.
Right. I'm just thinking of all the things that are in museums across the world that
right.
have been unlawfully taken.
Yeah, there's lots of things.
But pilfered. Yet, you know, it's considered, you know, museum quality or, you know, some other weird abstraction to where, oh, no, all these things that were taken out of the pyramids in Egypt, they
right.
belong to this museum now.
Right. Well, you know, this article is a little strange because it alludes to the fact that the original, quote unquote, owner of the coins, the gentleman took them from the Philadelphia Mint. He didn't buy them. What it seems like it's saying to me is that he stole them
right.
and then put them in a safety deposit box, you know, because he knew they'd be worth something, because I'm sure he could foresee the fact that they'd be worth something later on down the line.
Yeah, that is very interesting that, yeah.
I mean, they don't outright say that he stole them, but it definitely kind of alludes to the fact that he stole them. So if, in fact, he did steal these 10 coins, who's to say that, you know, it's still not the government's property, even though it's been, you know, technically, what is the government's property? Nothing, because it's the people's property, because we have paid for it. We're the ones that have given the money to have those gold bars and those gold double eagles.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm rereading the article here, and it doesn't say exactly how Israel Swit came to obtain those
right.
coins.
It just says he took
he
them.
Had the, he
that he had them.
Had the coins.
Yeah, that he had them. It doesn't say
a
that.
A Philadelphia Mint cashier
yeah.
had managed to give or sell some of the coins to a local coin dealer.
But apparently,
Israel Swit was not the cashier.
He was the
coin dealer that purchased them from a cashier at the Philadelphia Mint.
Okay, so I must have misheard what I read, because it sounded like, you know, they were alluding to the fact that Israel Swit had stolen if the cashier, because it does say that he gave or sold.
Right.
You know, to give or sell. So did he give them to Israel Swit or did he sell them? And I would say that he probably sold them.
Well, did the cashier have these and then instead of doing the legal thing and selling them back to the government, did he then decide, you know what, these are valuable, was this an act of civil disobedience?
Oh, definitely could be, especially if he gave them away. If this cashier squirreled away 10 of these coins knowing that the government was destroying them because they were getting rid of the gold standard,
right,
and then he squirreled them away and gave them to a dealer, a local coin dealer in Philadelphia, then I would conjecture that, yes, that was a form of civil disobedience. At least I'd like to think it is.
Right.
I mean, of course, I can't be in this gentleman's head and know
at the
time what his intent was.
Well, and we don't know if he lawfully obtained these coins or if they were stolen. But either way, it's very interesting. And
well, I like the fact that down here, I mean, this family found these. Obviously, they had nothing to do with the fact that whether these coins were stolen or not.
Right.
You know, we're talking like however many years later, what's 1933?
So
we're looking at 70, 80
years.
You know,
almost
70, 80 years, you know, have gone by. These people were probably not even alive when this transaction occurred.
Right.
You know, and so they're having their, which, you know, in my opinion, it rightfully belongs to them. If they did, the government didn't know they were gone. So what?
Right.
So they gave up they abdicated their claim to these by abandoning the gold standard, in my opinion.
I certainly can see how you come to that conclusion.
But what's the most irritating thing about this whole story is the last little paragraph down there.
In 2002, where they gave half of the money.
So now we're in 2012, 10 years later, and these people get their money, you know, their coins confiscated from
right.
them. When they're roughly the same price.
Right. Well, here's an interesting question. In a voluntary society where there is no central mint, let's just say that Ron Helwig, who runs Shire Silver,
right,
decides for some reason that he's going to repurchase all of the Shire Silver that he's put out, and he's just closing up operation.
So he doesn't want any of his Shire Silver to be out in circulation.
And somebody happens to keep a handful. And then 80 years later, they find a safe deposit box.
Yeah, his grandchildren find it.
Someone's grandchildren find it. Does that silver rightfully belong to Ron Helwig?
I would say no.
Right. So if these coins were legally obtained, then the government is doing illegal, unlawful thing. By
even if they were illegally obtained, you know, 80 years ago, the person that committed that crime is no longer in existence. So why should these people, you know, years later down the line, you know, 80 years later, get penalized for something that someone else did 80 years ago? I don't think that that's right.
Right.
I mean, the government didn't even know that they were in existence.
Right.
And yet
they
2002,
had no clue that they were there.
In 2002, they split the proceeds
that
with the family.
There should
with another
definitely
family?
Be some form of compensation.
That would have been fine.
Family.
You know, I don't think it would have been an issue had the government split the proceeds with this family. That
right.
would be more than fair, in my opinion, because, you know, yeah, it's murky deciding who did what. You know,
yeah.
You know, where was it legally obtained or illegally obtained? So it's murky there. You don't really know. Okay, so yeah, so the government gets half and the family gets half. I think that's more than fair.
Yeah, I completely agree.
But to just seize their property that they didn't even have to tell the mint about.
And if anybody is out there calling, we actually do have a caller.
Sweet.
We have a break coming up here in less than 30 seconds. So in the next segment, we'll
pick you
take
up,
your
caller.
Calls. We'll pick you up. And if you're listening and want to call in to Voluntary Values, telephone number is 603-435-1105.
Woohoo! I'm really glad I remembered the number correctly. Oh, shoot.
Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And we are here live every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on LRN, the Liberty Radio Network. That's LRN.FM. And the website for this show is voluntaryvalues.com. And Emberly, you have another story here for us.
Yeah, so we've got North Dakota apparently has no property taxes. They have a, it looks like they've abandoned their property taxes. And this story is from the it's from the newjersey.com. It says North Dakota's no property tax dream is infectious. This was published, looks like June 13th. So I don't know. Somebody sent it to me not too long ago.
I don't think North Dakota actually passed their proposal. They had a constitutional amendment.
Oh, so we're not sure if it actually got passed?
I remember seeing the results, and I believe that it failed. I'm not positive.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'll look into that.
While I talk about the story? Okay. All right. So it says, as New Jersey homeowners fall asleep tonight, maybe they'll dream of North Dakota. It's possible that the folks in Fargo will wake up this morning as the first state to abolish the dreaded property tax. Pinch me, they'll say. The average property tax bill in North Dakota is $2,600, chicken scratch compared with New Jersey's, which was more than $7,500 in 2011. That's up 20% from 2009 and nearly 12% of a family's annual income. Ouch. Big numbers are one reason to hate the property tax. Here's more. Middle-class Mahler, it's a flat tax, hitting the one-bedroom bungalow at the same percentage as the mansion next door, taking a larger chunk of the middle-class taxpayer's paycheck. Pockets of poverty. Taxing private property creates hopeless pockets in cities where there is precious little property to tax. In Newark, a third of the real estate is occupied by tax-exempt properties such as churches, schools, and government buildings. Suburban sprawl. For municipalities that need extra income, it's tempting to approve new development, if only to create a new stream of property taxes. Need money? Say yes to the strip mall. Ugh, strip malls are gross. Suburban sprawl. Oh, I'm sorry, I just read that. Pay up. If your pay is cut, your income tax rate drops too. But you pay your full property tax bill no matter what happens to your income. For many, the only way to get property tax relief in tough times is to sell. Anti-ownership. One of the loudest criticisms in North Dakota's anti-property tax campaign was that it's the only tax that can cost a family its home. In the words of one critic, it means all of us are renters. None of us are homeowners.
I've been saying that for years. Own property.
Right. My grandmother, a few years ago, got very ill with lung cancer. And, you know, she couldn't pay her property taxes that year because she had all of these, even despite having Medicare, she still had all of these bills that she had to pay. You know, I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars because of, you know, having a lumpectomy. She had a whole, you know, lung taken out. And the property I ended up paying the property taxes for her, which in Florida, in the rural parts of Florida, is not that expensive. I think for 5 acres and 3 homes on the property, it was only like $1,200.
I know I've heard Ian say before, and that's Ian Freeman, the host or one of the hosts of Free Talk Live. He said before that his property taxes here are 5 or 6 times.
Right. They're expensive
here in
New Hampshire.
What the property tax was in Florida.
I think the farther north you go, the more expensive the property taxes seem to get.
Right. Well, and one of the reasons that property taxes are high in New Hampshire is there's no income tax and no sales
tax.
That's
true. Yeah, that's true.
Although there is the prepared meals tax, and there's...
Which you can't avoid if you don't go out to eat.
Right. And there's tax on dividends and...
Which you can avoid if you don't have those kinds of things. capital gains.
Well, capital gain and then the corporate tax. So if you own a business, then there's business tax.
That's why you should own an agorist business so that you don't have to pay all those nasty little corporate taxes.
And then,
to
of course, the fuel tax, tobacco tax.
Right.
You know,
there are some taxes that it's almost
impossible to avoid.
Right, right. So, yeah. So, unfortunately, I can't avoid paying taxes in the form of gasoline because I live 20 miles away from the studio here. And since I do the radio show on Sundays and the TV show here in Keene on Mondays, you know, I have to drive to Keene. And that's, right. you know, 20 miles one way for me.
You know, there's a real easy way for you to avoid having to drive to Keene.
What? Give up the
lovely
apartment that I have for $800 a month and come live in Keene where the rent prices are double or almost double that? Have you looked at the market? Have you looked at the market in Keene for rental houses? They're ridiculous.
I have a one-bedroom apartment at a very
You have a one-bedroom. That's it. You have a one-room.
Yes.
I can't live in one room, Daryl. I have three dogs and a teenage son. I think that the government would look down on my son and I sleeping in the same room. You know, that's technically illegal for a mother and, you know, two separate sexes, mother and child to sleep in the same room.
Hold on. How is that illegal? What about when a child is an infant?
Well,
mothers often put a crib inside the bedroom.
Yeah, when they're infants, it's not such a big deal. But once they get to be five or six years old,
there should
once
be
they become
no laws.
Once they become school age, it becomes an issue.
Again, I agree that it's kind of weird.
But there's a lot of advocates. There's a lot of advocates for families sleeping together all over the world. It's done in lots of places
right.
all over the world where families sleep in the same bed together.
Right.
And it builds a very good, from what I've read, the research that I've done, is that it builds this bond between the family members that's almost unbreakable. And they're very comfortable with each other. And they, you know, I mean, their bonds of parent-child
right.
and parent-parent, you know, are just so strong. Where I think American culture, we don't have the same kind of bonds that many other cultures do with their children or with each other, even.
Right.
You know, I mean, my son did sleep with me the first couple of years of his life when I was breastfeeding him. Because I'm sorry, you know, when he's waking up two or three times a night to eat, I need my sleep. I have to work. So, you know, I mean, I'll just lay him down on the bed with me and let him eat and fall asleep. And that way I can sleep too and get my rest.
Okay, so going back to the property tax, I pulled up this article from CNN, also from June 13th, and the article says, voters in North Dakota, where the economy is swelling with money from the oil boom, have voted against abolishing the property tax.
That's so disappointing, North Dakota.
Just take a guess. What percentage of voters in North Dakota voted no?
51%.
51% would be an incorrect answer by a large margin. 76% of voters in the North Dakota primary election
76% voted against?
No on the initiative to get rid of property tax, according
to the
Secretary of State.
Do not move to North Dakota. Where they won't abolish the property tax. I wonder what their thoughts are on abolishing. I'm sure that the pro-school, public school crowd came out. And I'd like to see some of the ads, the television ads that were against this. Because I think they would be fascinating to see. Because I'm sure that the teachers' unions came out against it.
Oh, I'm certain that they did. And if you just Google North Dakota property tax vote, the first page is full of information with, you know, people putting out information anti-abolishing property tax.
Wow.
We'll talk about this and more coming up on Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. We've been talking about the North Dakota proposal to abolish property taxes, and of course that was rejected overwhelmingly by voters back in June.
So disappointed.
76% of voters in North Dakota bought into the propaganda that property taxes are needed and voted to keep them in place. Despite the fact that North Dakota has a $5 billion surplus and looks to just continue making money basically because of the oil boom.
It says here, North Dakota raises more than $800 million a year, nearly a quarter of its revenue from property taxes alone. That is crazy.
Hold on, what percentage?
a quarter of its 25%, nearly a 25% of its revenue yearly from property taxes.
That is quite a large amount.
Yeah.
Although I'm not sure what the North Dakota annual budget is.
Well, if that's 25, it's $800 million, and that's almost a quarter.
Okay, $800 million.
Times four. 240.
Okay.
24 million, 240 million, 240,000 million, I don't know, something like that.
2.4 billion. they have a $5 billion surplus. So eliminating property tax, even with the current surplus,
they've been fine.
Looks like they would be fine for several years.
Yeah.
Several years. And I know there are a lot of libertarians or people that call themselves libertarians that absolutely love North Dakota because North Dakota has a state bank.
I'm sorry, they have a what?
They have a state bank.
I think my hair just stood up on end. A state bank, like a state-owned bank?
As in like a Federal Reserve for the state of North Dakota.
And these are libertarians that we're talking about, and they love
right.
North Dakota because of this?
Right.
Well, they're not libertarians that I know.
Supposed libertarian. Yes. It's supposed libertarians.
Okay, good. Supposed.
they call themselves. But again, until a week and a half ago, Wayne Allen Root called himself a libertarian.
Oh, did you see
Glenn
all the
Beck
yeehaws?
Glenn Beck still calls himself a libertarian.
Did you see all the woohoos and the yeehaws on Facebook when people posted about Wayne Allen Root leaving the Libertarian Party?
The Libertarian Party had their best fundraising day. The day he left. He always bragged about his ability to bring in people to the LP.
Oh, he turned me
off. And
when questioned,
because I had actually asked him this several times, Wayne, where are the statistics on how many people you bring in? Because he would always, I was on so-and-so's show, and then I got this many subscribers to my email list, and this many people donating to support me. All right, well, how many people donated to the Libertarian Party? I don't know. I just know they're doing it. But
okay,
he never had these statistics, yet the day he left, within a couple of hours, three new life members joined the LP. That's $1,000 a piece.
Okay, I was going to say, that's quite a bit of money.
A minimum of $1,000.
Nice.
So, yeah, he actually did bring in some libertarians as he left the party.
You know, I thought it was really funny.
Because he left the party.
Well, you know, the Libertarian Party, the big L Libertarian Party, has really disappointed people over the years with some of their choices for presidential candidates, like Bob Barr in 2008.
Bob Barr.
And, you know, I know Bob Barr because I helped work on his congressional campaign in Georgia when I was still a Republican.
I'm sorry.
I am too. I'm ashamed. But that's my past life, and I have forgiven myself. But, you know, so you got Bob Barr in 2008, and then you've got Gary Johnson in 2012. And I know there's a lot of people railing about, you know, Gary Johnson not being a real libertarian. Because he did leave the Republican
right.
Party because he couldn't get the Republican Party
right.
nomination.
And there are a lot of people that absolutely love Gary Johnson because he's good on pot.
Well, and I agree.
Despite the fact he doesn't want
to decriminalize, does he? He just wants to legalize.
He wants to legalize and tax.
Yeah, so that's not
and
that's
he,
not
he
decriminalizing.
Saying, you know, Gary Johnson will end the drug war. Although, in the 8 years that Gary Johnson was governor of New Mexico, he never pardoned one nonviolent drug offender.
Huh.
In 8 years, you know, the supposed guy, you know, the guy that will supposedly
wow.
end the drug war, never pardoned a single nonviolent drug offender.
That's really disturbing to hear that, you know, because I know when I first heard of Gary Johnson a few years ago, so maybe 2010, you know, I thought, oh, this guy's great. You know, I think I saw him on Stossel and looked him up. And, you know, he was getting pretty big then in 2010. And I was like, wow, he's pretty cool. I didn't realize that, you know, he didn't. And it's shocking to me to find out now, I mean, today, that he did not pardon one person for a nonviolent
right.
crime. So there's no victim. Or you mean a victimless crime, not a nonviolent crime? Because, you know, destruction of property is not technically, if you're not hurting a person, it's not
nonviolent drug crime, meaning nonviolent, that someone who had drugs and
so basically a victimless drug
hurt
crime.
No one, right? You know, not someone that
shut
robbed
up a store.
Someone to obtain drugs,
right? But, or shot up a store right. to go in there and steal property right. to sell to get drugs,
right?
Okay,
well, that would be then considered like armed robbery and burglary.
I posted something on my Facebook page that shows that somebody sent me a while back that is amazing. It's got several different, and I know we're going off a topic of some of the things that we wanted to talk about today, but this just kind of feeds into the whole crime, you know, nonviolent crimes right. and victimless crimes things. So somebody sends me this. Okay. So it's got, the United States of America is number one in several categories that's on this
oh,
graph.
I've seen this list
total
several
crimes.
Times.
United States, number one. Rape, United States, number one. CO2 emissions, United States, number one. Divorce rate, United States, number one. Teen birth rate, United States, number one. Heart attack, United States, number one. McDonald's restaurants, United States, number one. Plastic surgery, prisoners. Yeah, all of those things were number one in, and we wonder why.
Back in the spring, Lou Rockwell actually posted an article, 40 different categories in which the U.S. is number one, but shouldn't be. You've already mentioned several of them, highest incarceration rate. There are more car thefts in the U.S. than any other country.
Wow.
The U.S. is the most obese country
well, now,
by far.
Now, I wonder, are they taking into context that we have more people than many countries, many of these countries that I see on this list, like the United Kingdom, Germany, France?
Well, a lot of these are done per capita.
Okay. Well, that works for me then.
Based on per 10,000 people.
Gotcha. Okay. Then that works for me. Then that's a little bit more fair.
The average American drinks more than 600 sodas a year, which is the most in the world.
I don't drink nearly that much soda.
There are more fast food restaurants in the U.S. The U.S. watches more television per week.
That doesn't surprise me.
Per capita, 28 hours. Although, to be honest, the U.K. is tied with us.
Ah.
So we are tied with the U.K. for the most television hours viewed per week at 28.
Well, at least not all of our channels are state-owned.
Right.
Oh, maybe they are, though. I don't know.
The U.S. has more credit card fraud. The highest percentage of one-person households in the entire planet.
Ah, that's what I was... That kind of points back to what I was saying earlier, that we're disconnected from each other. You know, we don't have the same kind of bonds, like community bonds
right.
and family bonds that other countries do because we're so isolated from one another. You know, where we live alone. Many of us live alone.
Right. And I wonder if that somehow relates to the most deaths by reptile. We'll try to figure that out as we come back on Voluntary Values. And we're back on Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And during the last segment, we were talking about some of the unusual things in which the U.S. leads the world. One of those being death by reptile. And if you want to find this list, you can go to lourockwell.com or just Google lourockwell.com and 40 embarrassing things that America is best in the world. And some of these are quite unusual. Some expected, some unexpected. I had no clue that they kept track of which country
either.
Had the most deaths by reptile.
There, I'm sure that there's some obscure, you know, government-funded researcher tucked away in some small or large university that studies this.
Well, a lot of these statistics come from... nationmaster.com.
Yeah.
Some of the I knew that the U.S. had more prescription drug advertising, just because we're one of the only countries that allows
it. Do you remember the golden days of commercials before prescription drugs were allowed? For some of you, you won't remember this because you were too young, but I remember when television did not have prescription drug commercials. Not that I watched much television when I was a child, but it hasn't been that long. Maybe 20 years?
I do not remember.
Maybe 15 years or so?
I just seem to always remember weird.
Nope. Remember when there were? Do you remember when there were cigarette commercials?
I do
on
remember
television?
Cigarette commercials, beer commercials, and always the weird commercial.
You can still get beer commercials on television,
right? I haven't watched TV in a while.
Well, during ball games, you can get
right,
it.
Right. I do remember, you know, as a child watching, you know, like Family Feud or Wheel of Fortune. During dinner time or supper time, and always having that weird, have you ever had that not so fresh feeling commercial?
Oh, the Nightingale commercials. Ew.
During supper, really, you're going to be airing
that?
Yeah,
well, we were never.
And then the Gold Bond medicated powder.
Yeah, which we all know what that was for, but now they.
Because it burns. Does
it burn?
The Ring of Fire.
Well, look. We are number one in the world for women taking antidepressants. Come on, ladies, get off the antidepressants.
And the most plastic surgery and eating disorders.
We are obsessed with how we look. I'm not. I don't really care. Whatever. I'm happy with me. And as far as I know, most libertarian or anarchist women that I know are pretty happy with themselves.
Right.
They like themselves. They're confident. They're beautiful. And they're more beautiful because they're confident. They feel good about themselves no matter what size they are.
And intelligence.
Or how gray their hair is or not.
Intelligence makes a woman sexy.
I agree that intelligence in men is the same thing. But not everyone agrees that intelligence is what makes people attractive. For most people, it's very, especially for men, it's very visual. So, right. You know, but even for women, it's visual too.
Okay, let me sort of, you know, explain myself here. Drew Barrymore
Gorgeous. Is
a very attractive woman, physically. I have no clue if she could hold a conversation to save her life.
Well, I don't either.
So, you know, when I say that intelligence is sexy, I would take an average woman that is very intelligent over Drew Barrymore, even if she were dumb as rocks. I would not date Drew Barrymore if she were dumb as rocks.
Right. Yeah.
And
because
before anybody jumps on, yes, I'm well aware that Drew Barrymore would probably never date me in a bazillion years.
Yeah,
even if I was the last man on Earth, like if there are
that's not
7 billion
true,
women and one man, she probably would not want to procreate with me.
Oh, you're so negative when it comes to yourself. Good Lord. You know, I don't even know where to go with that one.
Okay, so the U.S. has more security groping thugs at airports than anywhere else in the world.
But we also have more credit card debt, mortgage debt, student loan debt. And we spend more money on government schools than anywhere else in the world. And we have the dumbest people.
Things. Here are two things that I just find it odd that they're listed one after the other. Because some of the, you know, it makes sense to have the credit card, then the mortgage, and student loan debt all listed together. The most lawyers, which, funny enough, came right below death by reptile. But right after lawyers, pornography.
Maybe that's what they were talking about, that the lawyers were killing people because they're really reptiles.
No,
maybe Alex Jones has it right.
I actually followed the link, and it doesn't give a lot of information, but it does say whether being bitten, crushed, or killed otherwise. We don't know what that means. Americans seem to be the best at getting killed by reptiles.
Wow.
So, you know, maybe all the crazy people that want to be like croc hunter or the crazy Oklahomans that go noodling and then wind up getting eaten by alligators.
What's I don't know what noodling
okay.
is.
You're familiar with fishing, correct?
Yes. Is that where you fish with your hand?
Remove the rod and reel and the bait.
Is that that weird
and
commercial
you are
where
the fishing pole.
Where the guy like leads the classes?
It's
where
a human fishing pole.
That's disgusting. That
where
is gross.
Where you stick your hand like in a catfish? Hole that you believe a catfish lives in.
Uh-uh.
And you hope that a snapping turtle doesn't live there because otherwise your hand winds up missing a finger and you look like this.
People are insane.
I saw that on Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe a couple years ago.
Great show, by the way. Dirty Jobs is a fantastic show.
The guy was actually missing like half of his middle finger.
Just
and he's
weird.
Like, yeah, I thought it was catfish.
Hand fishing. Isn't that what they call it? Hand fishing?
It's called noodling.
Noodling?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Only weird. A redneck would come up with that.
I like this. Number 25, U.S. citizens spend more time in school than anyone else in the world. So why are so many of us dumb as a rock?
Ooh. Oh, wait. That's a rhetorical question. I was actually going to provide an answer. So, yeah, more eating disorders. The U.S. spends more on healthcare as a percentage of GDP than any other nation.
We have the most complicated tax system. Imagine that.
And if you want to know why the U.S. is so screwed up, we have the most laws of any country on
the
planet.
So you add the most laws together with the most complicated tax system, what do you get? You get the United States, which is one hell of a messed up country.
Yep. And the U.S. spends more on elections than any other nation. People spend more time sitting in traffic here than any other nation.
Wait, the United States exports more arms.
Yeah.
To other countries than anywhere else in the world.
And the U.S. more military. Weapons. This is not on the list, but the U.S. military exports more explosions to the world than any
other
country.
That's true, too. More drone bombings.
Smart bombs. We have smart bombs, dumb students.
Smart bombs, dumb students,
to the U.S. spending more on military than the next 12 nations combined.
Sitting in traffic. You know, that is true. If you've ever lived in a really large city or driven through a really large city like D.C., has some of the worst traffic I've ever been in. I've never been in L.A. traffic, so that doesn't really qualify. I know that that's really, really bad traffic.
Even here in Keene, which is a very small
traffic here
city,
is a joke.
But with all the red lights and then just random traffic circles that have red lights in the middle of them.
I've never been on a
Central Square.
Oh, it does.
There
have,
are red lights.
It does have red
around
lights
around a traffic circle.
Yep. It does have red lights,
which
right.
Totally, you know, goes against the reason for putting the traffic circle there in the first place. So even in this small town, where admittedly the traffic is nowhere near as bad as most of the places I've lived,
right?
But when you have centrally organized, you know, roads.
Centrally planned roads, yeah.
Then traffic will be horrible. I've seen video where different intersections that always have, you know, a lot of accidents and a lot of congestion, when the power goes out, and there's a video online, I forget what city it's from, but there's a comparison of one day where the traffic lights work, the next day the power's out.
Yeah.
The traffic flowed so much smoother the day the power was out, because people actually had to figure out, it's my turn to go. Stop, go, instead of a big long line of cars piling up at the intersection, and then they all go.
One day I was on my way to Keene to, I think, Social Sunday, and I was late because there was an accident in Marlboro right there on 101. And everything was going fine until the police showed up and it became a cluster monster. And I ended up sitting there for 30 minutes when the car ahead of me went ahead and moved before the police got there.
And we'll keep talking about this and all things voluntary in the second hour here on Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is hour number two, the final hour of the show here on LRN.FM. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And last hour, we ended the last hour talking about some of the categories that the United States of America is number one in, but shouldn't be. And some were surprising, some weren't. The most lawyers, the largest military. The surprising one was the most deaths by reptile. And we actually have a caller on the line. A good friend of ours, Serena, is calling in to tell us another category, one that we did not mention.
Hi, Serena.
How are you?
Hold on. Let me unmute the phone. That generally helps. All right, Serena, you are now on with Daryl and Emberly on Voluntary Values.
Hi. A friend of mine had mentioned that she heard that most of the serial killers in the world are the U.S. citizens, or are U.S. citizens, yeah, the U.S. citizens. They are 85% of the world, apparently.
Wow, that's a big number.
And here's...
Yeah, I think that was... I'm pretty sure that was Wikipedia. It was on Google, though.
Here's an interesting tidbit regarding serial killers, and I would not have brought this up had Serena not mentioned this.
Right.
My parents gave me the middle name of the most common middle name of all serial killers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is why I do not use my middle name, only the middle initial.
Is it Wayne?
I will not tell you.
Come on, we got John Wayne Gacy. He's the first person that came to my mind. Who else?
It doesn't surprise me, though, because of how much we're told, like, we have to jump through to be a successful people or anything, like, to not feel too oppressed. I mean, I bet people get angry and they grow up angry and then they're like, lash out at the world.
Could it have something to do with public indoctrination, also known as public schools?
You know, I mean, yeah, I've noticed, like, my family that are not from the U.S., they're a lot more friendly to new people that they meet. And that's just the only real comparison I could give, I guess. But they were less institutionalized. They were more just free to explore. So I feel like...
Yeah, this country loves to put people away who are different, who don't fit into this social order. And we love to just sweep those people under the rugs and not deal with them.
Well, how dare you be different when you can be an individual like everybody else and just fit in and conform?
I want to be a sheeple. I want to be a sheeple.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about, Serena?
Well, it kind of is a reminder, like my friend Holly says in one of her songs from Human Wine, our devotion is televised.
Our devotion is televised?
Yeah.
Devotion to...
Oh, just like, well, and more, I think it's more just like the TV set and all that other stuff, like different things like that.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like individual devotion to whatever.
Something else, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that TV, I did get sent a meme a couple of days ago that said, showed a TV screen and it was all fuzzed out and it says, I eat brains. On the TV screen. So I thought that was really funny.
I saw that.
And it's true.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really true. You know, I do still watch some television. I don't have cable, so I don't watch a lot of television. But
it's YouTube.
You know, I get through YouTube and I get through a website called Zahi Station so I can get news from around the world because I'm a news junkie. I have been forever and I always will be. So I do enjoy my news. So that's how I still watch television. Well, there's Hulu, too, out there, for those of you who know that one. And of course, we are in the fall opener. I think this week starts the fall opener for television.
Ooh.
My mother never wanted a TV in our house. She just let us watch the movies. She couldn't handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, for the longest time, when I was growing up, we didn't have a television.
Yeah, that was very nice to not have sticky exposure.
I'm sure... would have been very nice to not have a television.
Well, and then once I grew up and I went on my own at 16, I didn't have a television until I was 23.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't need one. I read books. Yeah. You know, I listened to music. And I'm getting back to that. I'm watching less television, less news, and I'm getting back to listening to more music, reading more books, and it's so liberating.
I'm sure it is.
Expands your mind. That's the only connection we have, spiritual connection we have, really, to this earth now is basically music and each other. It's metaphorical speech, basically, and connecting with each other. It's scarce now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to engage people in conversation anymore, especially if you don't know anybody in a place that you're at and you're the only person that you thinks the way that you do.
Right.
It can be intimidating to start up a conversation on the topics that you're interested in.
Well, and there are a lot of people with certain personality types that they just absolutely hate small talk.
My son is one of those people. He loathes small talk. I love it. I think it's fun.
I'm sort of borderline.
I am very good at it.
I'll talk about weird, random, oh, yeah, it was raining today. That's basically pointless conversations to me.
And my son feels the same way, but I use small talk as a way to get information and feel out what a person thinks and how they, how they're feeling at the moment, to where I can either engage them in more conversation or if I need to back off and maybe leave them alone.
Nice. That has depth to it. A lot of people don't have depth to it. They're just getting by, seeing faces and just moving along,
Right.
And talking about what happened on Jersey Shore or some other weird random TV.
Okay. I think I just lost some brain cells when you said, oh, I can't say it.
No, there's a little meme thing that, says every time a book commits suicide every time you watch Jersey Shore.
I saw that when it made me laugh and laugh and laugh.
the ironic thing, I'm kind of glad you said that because it made Daryl's random information knowledge sort of kick in. JWoww and Snooki both have books that are published and do not require crayons.
But you do
have words.
In reality shows,
it's not porn.
They censor out a lot of stuff. They do make you sound dumber than you are. And if you're saying anything dumb, they'll just pick out all the dumb things you say and leave out the other stuff too, just so that it could be more entertaining. Got to remember that stuff for reality shows, but. Still.
I tried to watch Jersey Shore one time. Because my aunt called me and she said, this is a great show.
Apologize.
It's really, really funny. And I'm sitting here, I'm trying to watch it. And I feel like my brain is trickling out of my ear. That's what I felt like.
I'm back in sixth grade.
After about 5 minutes, I was like, whoa, okay, I can't watch this anymore. This is disgusting. I turned the TV off and all of a sudden I could think again.
Well, everybody should be happy and thankful that Jersey Shore did get canceled recently.
Oh, it did?
Yes.
Oh,
apparently,
yay.
Because the Snooki got pregnant and they don't want, pregnant sluts running around, I guess. I'm not really sure why.
I thought she had her baby already.
I have no clue. I don't keep... All I know is the Snooki got pregnant and...
That's a really long pregnancy if she hasn't had that baby yet.
I don't know how you can grow and go through your life with a camera on you for that long, though, in that way.
Well, you have to have a certain type of personality to enjoy, living with a camera. I could never live with a camera on me 24 hours a day. Even the webcam weirds me out. Sitting here for 2 hours a week, even that weirds me out a little bit.
I just pretend it's not there.
Yeah, well, I'm obsessive. I have to bring it up on the screen on my computer and watch it because I'm weird like that.
Serena, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Serena.
Voluntary Values.
Thank you. We will
be back momentarily here on Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. Welcome back to Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network, online at lrn.com. FM. You can go there, look at the webcam, see our lovely smiling faces. We'll wave to you real quick. I believe Emberly's in the chat. I'm not sure.
I am in the chat, so if you want to talk, come on in.
Is anybody in the chat with you, or
nope,
are
I'm
you
the
talking
only one.
To yourself?
I haven't said anything, but I'm here.
And you had another story that you wanted to
Well, actually, I can't find that story right offhand, so I thought we would talk about the thing that we talked about last night where you saw on Facebook somebody was arguing for the limit of free speech.
Yes. Okay.
I think that's a pretty important thing to talk about
today.
Yeah,
one of my friends posted a status on Facebook. Apparently, she was listening to NPR, the taxpayer-funded radio outlet, and I'm trying to actually find the post here. She said that they were arguing, or the person that she was listening to on NPR was arguing against free speech. And then the comment thread basically became one of her friends arguing in favor of limits on free speech.
Wow.
Saying that, well, there has to be limits on free speech because otherwise you could yell fire in a crowded movie theater and people would get trampled and you would be responsible for inciting a riot.
Well, there's
a difference between saying there are limits on free speech and holding people accountable for actions.
Right. Screaming fire in a crowded movie theater is not, I wouldn't say, free speech. That is intending to cause harm to other people.
Right.
That's malicious.
Although,
unless there actually is a fire.
I was going to say, I can think of, you know, an example where it is perfectly legal and encouraged to yell fire in a crowded movie theater, and that is when there actually is a fire.
Right.
Or if you're watching a movie and they're doing sing-along or whatever, and there's a scene where someone's about to be executed by firing squad, and you just happen to know what the next word is, and you decide you want to yell fire.
Right.
So, you know, just to say, you know, you can't say this because it's illegal. Well, there are always exceptions to everything. And I was arguing that, you know, there should not be limits on free speech, because once you start limiting free speech, then it's no longer free speech. And then
right.
you can limit dissent.
Of course. You know, and all of these quote unquote free speech zones, those are definitely limits on free speech. And I know that they're trying to do those all over the place. I know that in Orlando, when I was there with several activists doing FIJA outreach, they tried to corral us all into what's called a free speech zone. We just ignored them and went ahead and did. We had probably 30 people there. And Julian Heichlin was there. And, you know, Belvin Perry is the big, you know, most despised judge, kind of like the judge here, Burke. Judge Burke. Belvin Perry is the same way down in Orlando. And when we were out there ignoring the free speech zone, Belvin Perry actually walked up to us and to Julian Heichlin. And for those of you who are not aware of who Julian Heichlin is, he is he's still alive, but he was a tireless advocate for jury nullification. He's actually run for office in several places. He's been arrested.
He's a former law professor,
I believe, right? Yeah, he wrote a book called The Non-Trials of Julian Heichlin. And he has now actually left the country because of incarceration, threat of incarceration by the United States government. But Belvin Perry actually walked up to him and started talking to us, and we got it on video. This was about 2 years ago, you know, we asked him, one of the activists asked Belvin Perry, are you going to arrest us because we're not in the quote unquote free speech zones? And he said, well, you guys aren't doing anything. You're not being rowdy or doing anything like that. So we'll let it slide today.
Oh, how nice of the masters to let it slide.
We said, well, thank you, Daddy. And several of the, you know, potential jurors got a good laugh. So it was fun. It was really, really fun. I love irritating judges like that.
You know, and me and you, we had an incident not long after I moved to Keene.
Oh, yeah.
Where we decided to have a peace rally on Memorial Day. And part of the rally involved us joining in at the tail end of the parade. And we were holding a sign, a banner, 3x5 banner that said, "I'm not disturbing the peace," large peace sign, "I'm disturbing the war."
Which is a great sign, by the way. I love it.
And I wish I could take credit for the sign. The design, I actually did that design myself. I had seen the sign before where all the wording was stacked on top of each other. And I saw that from Lee Wrights, and a lot of people know who Lee is. He's a peace advocate, and he sought the Libertarian Party's presidential nomination this past year, losing to Gary Johnson.
Oh.
I don't know if Lee actually made that sign up or not. If he did, you know, he gets all the credit. If he didn't, then maybe he could tell you where it came from. But we were carrying that sign, and then there was actually a letter to the editor in the local newspaper about us, how horrible we were, and that the only time that people should be able to advocate for peace is on Saturdays in Central Square, and any other time is disrespectful to all the people that have died. Well, no, the best way to honor the people that have died is to say no more war.
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
No more wars. I mean, how many people have to die in wars before we get it?
Apparently more people than have already died.
Speaking of that, I just had a conversation with a cousin of mine who is 15 years old. And, you know, he wants to join the military and go off to war because he thinks that that is, he has this romantic notion of fighting, you know, of war. And, you know, I vehemently disagreed with him. And we had this whole Facebook discussion about, you know, why I was against him going into the military. And my biggest argument, and the one that I stuck to the most, was I told him, I don't want you to die, nor do I want you to kill anyone else.
Yeah.
And that, in the end, is why I advocate for peace. And why we did, I think that's why we did, at least that was my motivation for doing the Memorial Day Peace Rally. Holding that banner and jumping in at the end of the parade was to show people that I am for peace and that I don't want you to die and I don't want your children to die and I don't want anyone else to die or anybody else's child to die.
I actually had a Marine one time while I was holding a similar sign. It was a small sign, not the large banner, but a Marine actually looked at me and said, "War is peace, MF-er."
Right, so they have. So we are now living in 1984.
Yes,
because that's one of the slogans of Oceania in 1984.
Right.
So if you haven't read that book, you need to read it because you will probably want to throw up.
Yeah,
when you realize the connections that you can make to today's society.
We'll talk about this and more coming up on Voluntary Values. Back on Voluntary Values, this is Daryl.
And this is Emberly, a little off the ball at that moment. Welcome back to the show.
And we've been talking about, I don't even remember what we've been talking about. Thank you, short-term memory problem.
We were just talking about free speech zones and limiting free speech.
Free speech zones, limits to free speech, and how me and you experienced some less than cordial people while we were protesting.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that.
Actually rallying in favor of peace.
When you were when you first said that you were thinking about an incident that we encountered, I immediately thought of the middle school incident that we had as well.
Oh, that was, where the crossing guard was telling the children, walk diagonal.
And don't listen to anything those people say. And how we were forced completely off the property of the school, even though it's public property.
Right.
How we were told by the police officer that it's not.
That's not public property. It's paid for with school board dollars.
That's right.
Not taxed up because everybody knows that once you launder money two or three times, it no longer is
no longer the taxpayer's
money. It's no longer taxpayer money because it gets stolen by one government agency, circulated somewhere else, then goes somewhere else, and then trickles down, you know, just magically. The school board just, you know, they magically generate that money out of thin air. But yeah, so the anti-war thing, and that sort of leads us into the next story.
Right, so is this technically, this next story that we're going to talk about, this does have something to do with free speech, don't you think?
Free speech, being pro-peace, and also, I actually have written what I am calling an open letter to all Muslims, which I'm sure will anger somebody. So if you get mad at me and want to give me an earful, call in, because I really want to hear it. 603-435-1105.
That's really irritating me because I still did not get that story that you're talking about, and it's really irritating me. Is it on fpp.cc?
It is on fpp.cc. It's the most recent article that's been published, so it will be right there, top of the page.
I think Facebook is limiting the amount of things that I can get on my Facebook page because I know a lot of people are tagging me in things that I'm not getting them.
That is really weird. So I'll start by just reading the article, and I posted this a couple of hours ago, so this is pretty much hot off the presses. During the week of September 11th of this year, American embassies in Northern Africa and the Middle East were attacked and invaded after protesters watched a clip of a video titled Innocence of Muslims. And I've still not watched the video.
I have.
Amberly, you could tell us more about that video after I finish this article. The film was allegedly made by a small group of Coptic Christians with the intent to anger Muslims. An Egyptian business associate of mine, Ahmed Al-Faiki, and he's actually published a book titled Operation 9/11. And the following that I cite from him, he posted on his Facebook page. And he says, I feel it is my duty to apologize and tell you what happened. He continues by saying that there are extremists in every faith, and extreme Muslims support Al-Qaeda. The Quran states that there's no excuse for killing innocent civilians. So what the members of Al-Qaeda did when they killed the innocent ambassador to Libya cannot be justified by Islam.
Wait, now, has it been confirmed that the people in Libya, Benghazi, they were Al-Qaeda linked?
I don't know if they are linked, but you know, he's
the ones who killed the
right. Well, he's making the connection
and the three other people.
They probably were in some way linked. I don't know, but they're definitely extremist Muslims. Okay. You know, he's admitting that, you know, these were extremists. Some extremists support Al-Qaeda, so he's not necessarily saying that they're one and the same.
Okay, I see what you mean. But, it's a little misleading when you were reading that it sounded like that these guys were, extremist Muslims who supported Al-Qaeda.
Right. No, he's just saying, you know, there are extremists in every faith, and a lot of extremist Muslims support Al-Qaeda.
Yes, I agree.
So, you know, whether they were Al-Qaeda or not is really irrelevant.
True.
They were extremist, and what they did cannot be justified with their faith.
Can't be justified at all.
Right. But, you know, there are some people that say, oh, no, this is what Islam teaches. He's setting the record. He's saying what they did cannot be justified by the Quran.
Yeah.
He goes on to say around 2,000 or 3,000 demonstrators went to the embassies to protest on the anniversary of 9/11. It was just coincidental that it was on 9/11. He said, you know, this makes Americans think that they were celebrating 9/11. They weren't doing that. Some support Al-Qaeda because, and he knows this because they were chanting the name Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And this, he says, this just shows how ignorant they are. Most of us, meaning most Muslims, are condemning what is happening at the embassy and condemning as well the murder of innocent ambassadors. Most of us are against Al-Qaeda, and we believe that they are bad for Islam. I don't have any hatred in my heart to Americans, and I hope they don't hate me. I apologize to you. Let's love, let's fight hatred everywhere. This is the message my prophet, this is the message of my prophet, whom these idiots are claiming to follow. And then I write, I commend Ahmed for posting this information along with his insights into the Muslim faith, and would like to send a friendly message to Ahmed and all Muslims. I do not support the foreign policy of the government of the United States of America. I do not condone the actions of the men and women in the American military when these men and women kill and maim men, women, and children in your country. There are over 300 million Americans. Less than 1% are in the military, and an even smaller percentage are involved in making American foreign policy. I do not consent to their actions and feel for the families of the millions of men, women, and children killed over the years by the American military. Clearly, the actions of the American government and, by extension, the American military do not represent the views of all Americans. I look forward to the day when a country supposedly acting on my behalf no longer has a presence in your country and no longer kills your family, friends, and neighbors. Please do not confuse the actions of a small group of people as being representative of my views.
I love that. That's a very powerful message to send out to everyone, both from your Egyptian friend, as well as the one that you just sent out to all of the people in the Middle East, that our government thinks, or the government of the United States thinks, that they can do whatever they want to. You know, I've been lucky in my life to know a lot of Muslims, and you know, all the crap that I've heard about them over the years just went away for me, because I met these people and they were very peace loving and they just wanted the best for their families. They didn't have any ill will towards me or anyone that I knew. And one of my friends, she actually gave me a copy of the Quran and asked me to read it. And then we talked about it afterwards. And, you know, really gave me an understanding of where they were coming from. And there's nothing hateful or evil in the Quran. I mean, there's wars and stuff like that, of course,
right?
That have everything to do with, like, the Jewish Bible and the Christian Bible.
There are rules in the Quran for if there will be war, then these are the rules you follow.
Right.
Do not kill innocent people.
Right.
You know, but there are some people that they just want to, you know, paint all Muslims as being horrible, so they take things out of context.
Well, it's easy to do that.
A lot of people do the same thing with Christianity, where they'll take, you know, one part of a sentence out of context.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to do.
Yeah. It's very easy to do. And then the whole chapter and verse thing that was added well after the text was written makes it even easier to take things out of context.
When we come back, we'll talk about the video, the actual trailer for this movie, if you want to call it that. So we'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for listening to Voluntary Values Radio.
Welcome back to the final segment of Voluntary Values. I know these 2 hours just go by so
fast. They do. It's almost like we're just getting started and it's over.
I know.
Sad.
And I've actually been in studio going on 4 hours now.
Wow.
Because I come in at 1 o'clock to record 2 5-minute news podcasts. And
wow, dedication.
I have the Freedom Minute and the Police Accountability Report,
right,
both of which can be heard on LRN.fm.
Well, when we left the last segment, we were discussing the letter that Daryl sent out, an open letter to all Muslims, which you can find on fpp.cc, a great article that was spawned by or set off by an Egyptian friend of his. Who sent a letter about all the riots and the killings, embassy
and
riots going on.
It really touched me when he said that he feels that it's his duty to apologize.
Well, you know,
This is one man apologizing for a billion people.
Right. I understand where he's coming from. And it's kind of like whenever I see a story about a drone, you know, killing, a family in Pakistan or in wherever, in Yemen, you know, 6 months ago, that would have made me cry. You know, and it made me cry every time I saw it, every time I heard of a story like that. But I've gotten to the point where I can't cry anymore. It still hurts, but I can't. And that's sad. That's a piece of me that's gone.
I don't know if the webcam can pick this up, but I know you can definitely see.
His eyes are all red and he's trying not to cry.
This is something that I'm passionate about.
Peace.
You know, there's one man apologizing for a billion people.
Right.
There's no need that he would have to do that.
It shouldn't be.
But the world is just so screwed up to where people are saying, you know, everybody that belongs to the same faith as this man is horrible and must die.
It's horrible and must die. That's why that the American government has all these wars going on in the Middle East.
So, you know, it touched me to where, you know, you've got one man apologizing for a billion people. So I'm apologizing for 300 million.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of these riots and why your Egyptian friend felt that he needed to do this, felt that he needed to apologize for what's happening, there's a lot of speculation that these riots that are occurring all over the world, because it's not just in Egypt, it's not just in Libya. Right, the Muslim world is up in arms
all
over
of
this,
North Africa,
this horrible,
all of the Middle East, over to Bangladesh, which is actually, Bangladesh isn't really in the Middle East, but a lot of people lump it in.
There's a lot of Muslims.
Right. But, you know, people sort of lump it in there because it's, you know,
because it's close. It's more Asia.
It's kind of close to Pakistan, and that's where the Muslims are.
Well, I took some time this morning to find the video clip because I saw an article that Google refuses to take it down from YouTube. I figured that the video was already gone, that the trailer clip was already gone because it's causing so many problems. But Google refused to take it down from YouTube. And so I thought, well, I better go and see
Google
it while I still can.
Google finally did something right.
Finally, but... And in the free speech area, yes. So I actually sat down and spent 13 and a half minutes of my... almost 14 minutes of my life watching this. And I have to say that I was sickened, disturbed. I actually wanted to vomit a few times. The absurd allegations, the total lack of respect just astounded me. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I absolutely could not believe that this is what some people think about Muslim people.
I have not seen the video,
but I
have heard some racist things
about
all Muslims.
It's terrible. I mean, it is beyond racist. It's beyond xenophobic. It's terrible.
I also haven't seen the Kony video and have absolutely no...
Kony 2012
to go
video?
Watch the Kony video. Yeah, you know, there are just certain things that I've heard about. I don't want to watch them.
Well, I wanted to see if the allegations and some of the stories that I had read about this were true. I wanted to see for myself if it was actually what it was. And now I understand why people are upset, and I understand why they're angry and why they might be right. Although that doesn't give them the right to kill anyone.
Right.
It doesn't give them the right to kill. But I can see why they're angry and why many people are rioting around the world over this. Because it is one of the most egregious and hateful things I've ever seen. The rhetoric in this is just beyond pale.
If anybody listening has seen this video and wants to throw some input in here in the closing minutes, give us a call at 603-435-1105. Because I would love to hear from someone else. Just to see if it is as bad as you're saying and as bad as the articles that I'm reading.
Oh, it's as bad.
Yeah, and I one of the reasons that I do not describe my faith with the term Christian is because this video, not because of this video, but this video just sort of highlight, because it was supposedly put out by a group of Christians. Granted, they were fringe, you know, the Coptics are a very fringe sect of Christianity, but just because of the actions of so many people that claim to be Christian, I am often reminded of the Gandhi quote, where Gandhi asked, somebody asked Gandhi why he was not a Christian, and he said, "I like your Christ, but I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ."
True.
And the whole point of being a Christian is you're supposed to act like Christ did.
I don't know of any Christian that actually does act like Christ,
though.
You're
supposed to love your neighbor. You're supposed to, you know, feed and clothe
them. Except for anarchists and voluntarists who actually love their neighbors.
Right.
Who actually, you know, exist, coexist in a world with other people without being violent.
Yeah, and you're not supposed to be judgmental.
Right. Keep your judgments to yourself. Now, I have to say that there are some very judgmental people even within the Liberty Movement.
Right.
So it's time we start, you know, understanding that there are other people that are not exactly like us, and to be accepting of all those people that aren't like us.
And now I would like for more.
And that goes for everybody in the world.
I would like for more Christians to read the book that I wrote, The Anarcho Teachings of Yeshua.
Yes.
And I would like more anarchists to read it. Because
it does not get preachy.
It, you know, despite the title of the book, it is not preachy at all.
Well, I do believe that Jesus was an anarchist. If you look at many of the things that he talked, you know, if you actually read the Bible, especially the New Testament, where he talks a lot, you will see that the things that he teaches about are peace, love,
yes,
not being violent,
but. People will take certain quotes out of context.
Yeah, they love to do that.
Where, you know, Jesus said something about, you know, I came not to bring peace.
Oh, here we go. I just pulled up an article on this movie clip. Anti-Islam film clip on YouTube made by porn director. The inflammatory anti-Islam film that has triggered rioting across the Muslim world was produced by a U.S. religious group called Media for Christ and reportedly directed by a pornographer. The man apparently behind the film entitled Innocence of Muslims on its 14-minute YouTube trailer is a U.S.-based Egyptian Copt and fraudster who may have violated his parole, U.S. officials said Friday. So that's interesting. We have a religious group, a United States lit religious group called Media for Christ, and they hire a pornographer to direct this anti-Islam, highly inflammatory anti-Islam movie.
Yeah, which just goes to show how unchristlike they actually are. Not for necessarily hiring the pornographer.
No, not for that at all.
You know, because people can be
forgiven.
Although
that's ironic and funny.
Right, definitely. But, you know, people can be forgiven, and there's always, you know, whenever something happens and somebody ties something else into Christianity, oh, this guy calls himself a Christian and one time got pulled over for a DUI that one time. You know, there's always some kind of weird thing of where they always try to just, you know,
right.
Like, so show how people are
Google the clip and take a look at this, the Innocence of Islam video clip. Take a look at it and let us know next week what you think, or, you know, let us know on the website, voluntaryvalues.com. Tag us in your comments on Facebook, because this is an important issue, and we look forward to talking to you next week. I'm Emberly.
And this is Daryl, and this is Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. Until next week, peace.
Peace, freedom, and prosperity.